I'm going to say good morning to parents-to-be on the long to-do list for your baby. Parents expecting little boys may have another medical issue to consider. So in the next year, federal public health officials may begin recommending routine circumcision for baby boys. And that news comes to us from a national HIV prevention conference being held this week in Atlanta. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention actually support the proposal, and they say that routine circumcision could lower HIV infection rates. Now, already, just rumours of the recommendations have stirred up some debate, both ethical and medical. We're going to stir it just a little bit more. Here to talk about the routine circumcisions is Dana Goldstein. She's the associate editor at The American Prospect. It's a progressive political magazine in Washington, D.C. Dana covers public health for the magazine and has also reported on circumcision and disease prevention for the last 2 years. I'll take a pause and say good morning to you, Dana.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. Also joining us is Dr. Roy Gulick. He's the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. He specializes in HIV/AIDS. Good morning, doctor.
Good morning.
First of all, let's get to the crux of the matter. The medical basis for recommending routine circumcisions is what?
There were three very impressive studies that were completed in African nations, three separate studies, which enrolled over 11,000 heterosexual adolescents and adult men and randomized them, that is, flipped a coin, between circumcision and waiting for 2 years and then becoming circumcised. All three studies were stopped early because of an impressive benefit to men who were circumcised in terms of lowering the risk of HIV acquisition, that is, HIV infection, by about 50%.
So these were men in Africa who, instead of just using a condom, actually decided to get circumcised to reduce their infection rate?
Not instead, because the principles of avoiding HIV infection have not changed in years. We still follow the ABC, abstinence, be faithful, and condoms. The ABC approach has been around for a long time. This was an add-on.
I see.
See, I remember these studies because I was in Johannesburg at the time reporting, and the reason the studies actually stopped was because the researchers felt it was unethical not to just circumcise all of the men and not have a test case and then cases where men were circumcised. So obviously in that situation, East Africa, it worked, but can you really apply that same research done in Africa where there's a strong cultural pushback against using a condom to little baby boys born in the U.S.?
I think that's the open question here. One has to weigh the fact that these studies were impressive. They reduced the rate of infection in these adult heterosexual men by about 50%. But the question is, can you generalize those findings to what goes on here in the United States? Can you take results from African adult men heterosexuals and apply them to baby boys in the United States? And that's the ongoing controversy here.
Dana, let me just bring you into that controversy. Dana Goldstein, Associate Editor at The American Prospect. What is the debate that's going on amongst parents about this new idea that circumcision will help their little boys from contracting HIV later in life?
Well, among parents, I mean, the new evidence that it's effective in preventing HIV contraction is obviously really convincing. That 50% number should not be easily ignored, especially when here in the United States, for example, in Washington, D.C., where I live, 1 in 20 adults are infected with HIV.
But
so it is a serious problem.
I'm a parent. Why should I pay attention to it, Dana?
Well, you know, you want to prevent, most people would like to prevent their child from contracting any disease if they possibly can
make a
decision.
I'll tell my child to use a condom. I tell my child to use a condom, to not be an IV drug user, to not be in a high-risk group.
Right. And that's what HIV/AIDS activists have been saying. They've been working for 3 decades to really send the message in communities nationwide, especially in the gay community that's most at risk, that condom use is the only 100% effective way to protect yourself. And they're worried that if the CDC and other American health authorities go out into communities and tell people, hey, circumcision is a great way to protect yourself, that it'll detract from that message that condoms are so important.
But the issue here is that we've been using the ABC approach for over 20 years, yet 56,000 Americans are newly infected every year. So the prevention message has essentially failed, and we need to do better. We need better strategies.
But does circumcision even work here? Let's take it, modes of transmission in the United States. Does circumcision have any relevance to male-to-male transmission? It seems to me the data is female-to-male.
That's a great question. I mean, the studies we're looking at male contraction of the disease from women. And we know that over half of new HIV cases in the United States are in the gay population. So that's something really important to consider.
Well, it's so important that it makes this statistic irrelevant in the United States almost.
And it's also important to point out that the United States already has the highest circumcision rate in the developed world, and we also have one of the highest HIV rates. So we're not really sure if
that's interesting.
In our population there's really much of a connection.
We've got 75% prevalence of circumcision in the United States, Canada 30%. You were going to say something, Doctor?
We really don't know how these results would apply to men who have sex with men. And we further don't know if circumcising a man will actually protect transmission if he becomes infected to a woman. So there's a lot of unanswered questions about how to apply these
results. And pediatricians would advise parents not to get their children circumcised.
The American Association of Pediatrics 10 years ago came out after reviewing all the data and rescinded their previous recommendation for circumcision. So it's not routinely recommended right now.
Dana Goldstein, Associate Editor of the American Prospect, you had something to say.
Oh, I was just going to say that even the Academy of Pediatrics is reconsidering this, given what they consider the quite persuasive studies out of Africa. So there's going to be a lot for parents to weigh when they're making this decision in the future. You know, not to mention the more traditional arguments against circumcision, that it's a surgery without consent, that it may lead to some decrease in sexual sensation. So I think there is a lot for parents to consider. And of course, there are cultures and religious groups, such as my own ethnic heritage, Judaism, where this is par for the course and parents wouldn't consider not circumcising.
Dr. Gulick, the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. I can see parents of baby boys sitting there going, I don't know what to do. What's their takeaway? What's their takeaway that you can give them?
I think what I would do is present the pros and cons like we do with any other medical decision.
To the baby?
Well, that's a good,
good
point.
Luck.
That's a good point. The parents are going to have to make this decision, and that has some people are criticizing that approach. But I think you weigh the pros and cons. The studies are impressive. Three large ones all found the same effect. 50% decrease, which is not perfect, but is impressive. The negatives are these were adult, African, heterosexual men. And can we really apply that in the United States? So it's an open question.
Interesting stuff.
Thank you very much. After 8 minutes of discussion, we still end with our open question. Dr. Roy Gulick, Chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases at Weill Cornell Medical College in New York City. Thank you very much. And Dana Goldstein, Associate Editor of the American Prospect. That's a progressive political magazine in Washington, D.C. Thank you for being part of our conversation this morning.